You're listening to On Board, the official podcast of The Shakespeare Project at theshakespeareproject.net. All right. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are, wherever you're listening. Thank you for tuning in to episode 2 of On Board, the official Shakespeare Project podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schofield. Thank you for listening. And thank you for those of you who tuned into episode 1. Thank you. And hopefully this one can be just as exciting, more so. And I felt like last episode went a little too long. So hopefully I can keep this one a little bit more concise. So we're just going to get right into it. I like to start off every show with something that's on my mind. I mean, there are a bunch of things to say, here's the thing. Maybe that's the title of this. Here's the thing. I like that. So here's the thing for today. Recently, I wrote a post on the website, and you can check it out. It's called "What Is Past Is Prologue," and the whole thing about the post is about. It's an essay I wrote about the conflict, I believe, and that exists between new plays and new playwrights and Shakespeare. And the issue is this, and you can read more about it in detail on the website. And I'll put a link in the show notes for you. But the thing is that the tension exists, because Shakespeare really is done more often than new plays and really takes up so much room. There's hardly much opportunity for new plays to get done, for new playwrights to get their stuff done. It's very easy to get your, stage reading done. There's plenty of places that do that, and they'll do that because it doesn't cost much, but to actually get a production, a full production, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of gambling on the company's part anyway. And if you're wondering what that noise is in the background, if you can hear there's a dog in my room right now. It's my girlfriend's grandma's dog, Lacey. So she's if you hear some noise, she just sneezed. That's what that is. So if you can just pardon that. Anyway, but back to the topic. And I learned about this really a couple years ago when I was working with the Playwrights Foundation of San Francisco, and they specialize in new plays and fostering new work by new playwrights and emerging playwrights. And I learned about this because it's all over the place. And the post really was motivated because a friend of mine that I more of an acquaintance really, that I met through Playwrights Foundation, he likes to produce a lot of new work and foster new work and all that in his own thing. And he particularly likes working with new playwrights. And he put a post about a conversation he had with a friend of his on Shakespeare. And he wrote that he had done a lot of work with Shakespeare, himself. He had done a lot. He was excited about it. He liked it. It was fun. It was exciting. But it just wasn't his thing. He couldn't understand why one would focus so much attention on Shakespeare. For him, it's just one guy, one person's work. And that new work should be the thing. New work is new, and it's always, there's something bubbling every single time. You're going to get a new voice every single time, a new perspective, which I'd argue, because of that, that's probably not completely true. You know, get 100 playwrights to write a political play and sort of about their visions of politics. You're probably going to get the same view every single time. You know, maybe 80% of the voices will relatively be the same. They're all going to be completely different. Every voice is individually different, but the perspective on things tends to be a little close-minded because a lot of playwrights have the same core beliefs, I'd argue. The business of theater itself is a very, unfortunately, I believe, a very members only type of thing. It's a very incestuous society. I mean, you see, the same critique goes to Hollywood. I don't want to start anything if anyone has anything different to say, but that's just my general belief from what I have seen and felt. That being said, new work is important, and I believe new work and new playwrights should be the centerpiece of theater today. The people in charge of the theater need to be the people doing new plays. That needs to take up at least 70% of what theater is today. You know, and new plays, new musicals too, because I mean, you can see it plainly on Broadway. How many new musicals are getting done? How many new big time musicals are getting? They're all movie adaptations. Those are all the new plays coming, the new musicals getting done right now on Broadway. Aladdin just opened. You know, you had Spider-Man, which, you know, whatever. But so much new stuff, quote unquote, is getting, and they're turning Frozen now into a musical. Where are the brand new musicals like Next to Normal and, you know, Book of Mormon, more stuff like that, that's brand new, that's brand spanking new, that isn't based on a damn movie. You know, that's the easiest place to see it. And then you just go down to the places that do plays and, you know, in a mixture of places. It's Shakespeare, and then a bunch of others, you know, maybe an O'Neill piece, a Chekhov piece, maybe something from Neil Simon or Sam Shepard. And then if you're lucky, you'll get one show in there. That's a long company season. But if you get lucky, you'll get one new play in there. And a few places will do lots of new work or only new work. But the problem is that it's very expensive to do that. It's very hard to get behind that. Anyway, this is a long-standing conversation. I'm going on longer than I would like to. But the theme of today's show is the new. And I do believe there is a harmony between new plays and Shakespeare. From the conversations I saw on Facebook that sparked this whole thing, it seemed like a lot of people were saying, let's do away, and I'm sure this is not what they meant, but it came off this way. So I know if I got in a real conversation with them, they'd be like, well, no, here, let me back up. But the attitude seemed to be, at least initially, let's do away with Shakespeare. Let's have all new work. Shakespeare's overrated and all that stuff, which he's not. I know they don't believe that. And if they do, I would like to have a conversation with them about how he's not overrated. You know, 450 years later, we're still doing his stuff. I mean, we're still doing his work. And by the way, when is there going to be another single playwright? And I do. And by the way, this is another podcast. I'll do another podcast later, maybe about the authorship question, which is, to me, is completely ridiculous. There is some doubt to be had, of course, because you should doubt most things, especially things like history. You never know. As time goes on, things get distorted. And so I do believe there are plays of Shakespeare's that aren't Shakespeare's, you know, Henry VIII, for example, or at least that he didn't have much to do with, like Pericles, for instance. That's a horrible play. Parts of it are good, and you can tell the parts that are good were probably done by Shakespeare, and the other parts were done by someone else. So, you know, her noble two noble kinsmen. But when is there going to be another playwright that comes along? One single playwright who writes Richard III, Romeo and Juliet, Hamlet, Macbeth, Othello, King Lear. And that's just a couple of them. Coriolanus even is an amazing one. Julius Caesar, Antony and Cleopatra, Twelfth Night, Much Ado About Nothing. These are amazing plays that stand the test of time and are constantly being found new ways to tell them and new ways to interpret them for our modern world. And every time they're done, it seems like a play that was written just yesterday about our own contemporary problems. And as a director, that's what I love about it, because I get to do that. I get to take someone or something that was written for a world 450 years ago and make it about today's problems and make it about today's issues and today's people. And that's what the fun is about Shakespeare, for me anyway. And so hopefully we can find a balance. This is the other thing, is that I've noticed, I've only been to the East Coast a few times, but I think this is a bigger East Coast problem than it is a nation problem, a national problem. Because on the West Coast anyway, I see, at least from my perspective, there can always be more new work done. And I think more new work should be done all the time. But generally over here, there's a lot of new work being done, and then Shakespeare has its place. There are really only 7 Shakespeare companies around in the Bay Area that I know that do Shakespeare every single year. Everyone does Shakespeare all the time, but companies that are devoted singly to Shakespeare, there are only a couple of them here in the Bay Area, and that I know about anyway, and they're everywhere on the East Coast. Just throw a stone and there's a new Shakespeare company. Whereas over here, you get more people coming out saying, I want to do new work. And that's great. That's what the nation should follow. You don't need to get rid of both, one or the other. You can have both, and really 80-20%. That's all I'm saying. Have 80% new work and then 20% stuff that's been done, you know, stuff that's Shakespeare, that's, you know, Molière, the Greeks, even modern classics like O'Neill and Tennessee Williams. That's what I want to be done. Because then I think it can satisfy both parties. Shakespeare's done every year, yet it's not taking up the whole space at the table. So that's my little soapbox there for today. And the theme of today is news. So as we go forward with today's episode, everything will be featured around this idea of the news. All right, now time for Ye Old Flicks. All right, so for today's movie, I'm choosing Much Ado About Nothing from Joss Whedon. Recently came out. It's going along with the theme of new. And I love this movie. It's the movie Joss Whedon. For those of you who don't know, he's the director of The Avengers. He created Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Angel, Firefly, Dollhouse. He's done a lot of great stuff. I've been a fan of all of his stuff, going back into Angel. That was the first show of his I saw. And then I got into Buffy, and then I got into Firefly, and Serenity, and then when he took on the Avengers, I love the Avengers, great movie, and excited to see what he does with the second one. But after the Avengers, according to him, he needed something small. He wanted to do something small. And I've known for a while, based on like behind the scenes sort of interviews that he's given, that he loves Shakespeare, and he would take his friends and other, actors he's worked with, and he would have like cool, like Shakespeare readings over at his house. And I guess what he decided to do was just turn one of those days where he gets all of his actor friends over to read Shakespeare and instead make it a movie. And he filmed the whole thing in his house. If you go watch the movie, that's all his house. They'll say so in the, just look at the behind the scenes features. What I love about the movie in particular, is that he really doesn't do much to make it different. I mean, really he does. He does this thing with it where he makes the comedies slick and cool, which, and by that I mean like there's this certain sleekness and sort of cool, like the cool guy in the room, you know, like the Fonzie, or, you know, like a darker version of the Fonzie when it comes to the tragedies. You know, they seem so cool and, you know, off, you know, the bad boy, you know. And the comedies seem like, oh, cool, awesome, fun, you know. They don't have that same, you know, aura as the tragedies do. And the comedies, some of the comedies, I mean, after Hamlet, I think Twelfth Night is my favorite play of his. It kind of goes back and forth, but Hamlet's definitely my favorite. And then after that, really, I think it would have to be Twelfth Night. And then, you know, he made me fall in love with Much Ado. And it's so sleek and awesome. He does a cool, nice, slick, modern adaptation. People wearing suits and dresses. And he doesn't really do much at all. It's in black and white. There are some great music choices. I don't know. It's just this aura that he creates. And it's the same thing with all his work. You have no idea why it's so awesome. It's just an aura. It's just this feeling that you get. And unlike the other things, there's not that one thing that you can point to and say, oh, well, that's why. You know, like with Angel or Buffy, you could say, well, you know, that's my life. You know, like, he talks about so many problems of my life and he finds it to do in this fantastical way in Buffy or Angel or Firefly. You know, it's just so, it's the perfect science fiction story or whatever. Or Avengers, where it's like, it's all my favorite Avengers together and they all get their share of time and they all have their big hero moment and, you know, ah. But Much Ado, it's hard to put my finger on why it's amazing. It just is. And it's this new take on it, which isn't that new either. I mean, it's not like he's the first person to say, oh, let's do Shakespeare, but in modern dress. You know, that's been around forever. It's hard for me to put on my finger on why I love it so much and what makes it very specifically the best. But anyway, check out Much Ado by director Joss Whedon. It's a really great take on it. It really is. Just check it out. You'll really enjoy it. All right, now time for our next segment on the show. This is a new segment. It's called Our Featured Production. Now, what this is I'll take a production that I've seen, that I've experienced, either in the past that's going on currently or that's coming up in the future that I would like to see, and, you know, some of the news that I've heard about it and all that. Right now I'm going to go a little bit far into the past, back when I was in college. I believe it was 2009, maybe? Maybe 2009, running into 2010, I think. At San Francisco State, director Mark Jackson and his, I believe, six or seven actors, did a production called Juliet. And what it was, I believe, six women and one man playing the part of Juliet. And it's hard to explain what that means, but they're all playing Juliet, and they're reenacting Juliet's journey through Romeo and Juliet. But there's a lot of physical theater involved, a lot of reinterpretations of the text, a lot of physical movement. That's the biggest thing. A lot of use of viewpoints, the theatrical technique of viewpoints. Google it. It was really amazing. And what I loved about it was it took the text of Shakespeare, and they did it in new ways. And the best part, the highlight of the show. There are many highlights of the show, but for me, the big highlight. And this is actually, before I get to the highlight of the show, let me start how it starts. You have a few of the Juliets coming out, and they're right in front of the curtain, and there's a TV, an old TV, and it's playing the old Franco Zeffirelli Romeo and Juliet from, like, I believe the 70s or 80s. And they're watching it, and, you know, it's whatever. And then the show starts, the announcement comes on, and then the show starts, and they turn off the TV, and they all get in a line, like a police lineup. And they open their mouth, they turn around, they do all these movements, these silent gestures over and over, like they're in a police lineup being told what to do, do this, do that, do that. Obvious the metaphor of that is. And then all of a sudden they start this big dance, and then they start speaking the text, going through the play of Juliet's beginning, having to meet Paris, and it's boring, and it's all that. They go to a dance, they have to dance with Paris, and whatever. And then the music changes, and the lights change, and all of a sudden all their attitudes change, and they look over, and all of a sudden Romeo pops in. And then all this great stuff is happening, and they meet Romeo. And the cool thing that they do with the balcony scene, they have one Juliet carried up onto the high by all the other Juliets as the other one goes into the audience and runs around, and they reenact the balcony scene. And then what happens at the end when Romeo runs away after saying goodnight, 1,000 times goodnight, or maybe that's Juliet, I forget, is they do what they call the dance of joy. Is they're happy, they're amazing, Romeo just left. What do you feel after that? What does Juliet really feel about that afterwards? Just utter joy. And how do you present that? Well, they did a choreographed dance that they created themselves to the song 500 Miles. But yes, the I would walk 500 miles, you know, that one. I'd play it for you in the background right now, but there are royalties involved. Anyway, but that's the highlight of the show. It's all of a sudden you're in this act break and they're doing these dances, and then they go back into the show, and then Romeo kills Tybalt, when they find out about that, they all have arguments among themselves about who is right and what Romeo did and all that, using Romeo, I think Juliet's and other people's lines. And then it's hard to go through and tell you point by point what happened, but the main point I want to come away with this is that what this did and what inspired me to do as a playwright and as a lover of Shakespeare is to really look at these things in a different way and say, well, we've done this so long and so much, especially these plays like Romeo and Juliet and Hamlet too. They're the two companions that have been mined to every single letter for what they mean and overanalyzed and overanalyzed. And to give them real life, we got to think outside the box and stop thinking about what they originally were or what they originally meant or what the original point is. Maybe if we do, in certain situations, we can get to a newer truth. But to give it energy and that life and that excitement, we need, you know, we need to think from our gut, if you will, you know. And that's what this Juliet, it was all gut. It was all emotion. It was all just amazing, amazing stuff. I wish there was video of it. I know it was recorded, but I think Mark Jackson did that for his own. But anyway, that's my featured production for today, Juliet. All right, so following the today's theme of new, the next segment is New Bards. And this is really a profile of new playwrights. It's just a segment where I don't talk about Shakespeare, well, not much about Shakespeare, and I focus instead on new playwrights. And the first person I decide to choose is someone I know, someone I've worked with before. I've taken a few of her classes, or really just one of her classes. But her name is Lauren Gunderson. She's a local playwright. She's originally from Georgia. And she has a lot of great stuff out there. And the main reason I chose her first, because she has four plays in general that follow what she calls on her website the Shakespeare cycle. And they're all four plays all intrinsically based or inspired by Shakespeare. The first one is very obvious. It's called Exit Pursued by a Bear. It's available online if you want to buy it. I forget which company is currently putting it out, is putting it out for print, but it is out for print if you want to buy the script. But Exit Pursued by a Bear, the title taken from the famous stage direction, probably the most famous stage direction of all time, from Winter's Tale. And on her website, that she says that's part one of the Shakespeare cycle. That's sort of a revenge comedy, I believe, set in the South. I forget. The next one is Toil and Trouble. She said it's sort of on her website, as a new hipster's Macbeth. I think it's business students who, instead of going to graduate school, decide to take over a small country. That's the little I know of it. I really wish I could have seen it when it was in the Bay Area. The next one is called The Taming, obviously from Taming of the Shrew. And then the one after that is one I'm really excited for. And I really want to know more about. But as far as I know, it's only been in a few stage readings. Called We Are Denmark. And it's about Hamlet. I believe it's about Hamlet and meeting a great astronomer in school and being in school and all that. So that's the other thing she does a lot. She likes to write a lot of plays about science. That she's so different from any of in so many ways. And I love the pursuit of science that she does. Currently, she's doing a play called, she has a play called I and You. I believe it just wrapped up here in the Bay Area. Doesn't say in my notes, but it does say it is playing, if you're in Indianapolis area, at the Phoenix Theater, March 13th to April 14th, so you have a chance to still see that. And it doesn't say the dates, but it's going to be playing at the Geva Theater, spelled G-E-V-A Theater, in Rochester, New York. So those are her current plays coming up. And where they're playing. So that's New Bards. Lauren Gunderson. That's Lauren Gunderson at laurengunderson.com. I'll have her link in the show notes. Go check her out. She's a great playwright. A lot of great plays. So go check her out. She's amazing. All right. So for today, we're going to end on a featured reading. I did this last week with, I believe, Richard II. And instead of breaking it down and analyzing the script, I'm just going to leave you with the reading of it. And I'll give you a little background on it, on why I chose this. It's from Romeo and Juliet. I chose it because my featured production today was Juliet. And also following this theme of new for today's episode. There's a great part in Romeo and Juliet. It's Act 2, Scene 3. Romeo has come back after meeting Juliet and is telling the friar about how he met this amazing new woman. And Friar is saying, you know, is basically reacting like, wait a minute, weren't you just in love with Rosaline? And now you're, oh, thank God you're over that. But still, I mean, really? You're all over? Anyway, so it's just this whole just theme of new. It doesn't follow completely, but it's just this idea of the new. And what does this mean? And anyone who has ideas about this concept of new playwrights and Shakespeare and that sort of conflict today, please give me an email with your thoughts, or if you're on the website, give me a in the comments section, or if you want to email me, it's Kevin, K-E-V-I-N, at theshakespeareproject.net. That's Kevin at theshakespeareproject.net. Any questions, ideas, any things you want me to talk about in another episode, let me know. And any notes, any things you want to get back to me on, let me know, and I'll maybe have a listener mail segment next reading. So anyway, here we go with Romeo and Juliet. I'll be first playing. First, you'll hear Romeo's speech. It's a small little speech, and then you'll hear the rest is the friar. And hopefully I'll change my voice so you know. So anyway, enjoy it. Thank you for listening, and have a good life and a good listening. See you next time with episode 3. Then plainly know my heart's dear love is set on the fair daughter of rich Capulet, as mine on hers, on so hers is set on mine, and all combined save what thou must combine by holy marriage. When and where and how we met, we wooed and made exchange of vow, I'll tell thee as we pass, but this I pray, that thou consent to marry us today. Holy Saint Francis, what a change is here! Is Rosaline, that thou didst love so dear, so soon forsaken? Young men's love then lies not truly in their hearts, but in their eyes. Jesu Maria, what a deal of brine hath washed thy sallow cheeks for Rosaline! How much salt water thrown away in waste to season love that of it doth not taste! The sun not yet thy sighs from heaven clears, thy old groans ring yet in mine ancient ears. Lo, here upon thy cheek the stain doth sit of an old tear that is not washed off yet. If e'er thou wast thyself, and these woes thine, thou and these woes were all for Rosaline. And art thou changed? Pronounce this sentence then. Women may fall when there's no strength in men. Thou chidest me oft for loving Rosaline, for doting, not for loving, pupil mine, as baddest me bury love, not in a grave to lay one in another out to have. I pray thee chide not. She whom I love now doth grace for grace, and love for love allow, the other did not so. Oh, she knew well. Thy love did read by rote, that could not spell, but come, young waverer, come, go with me. In one respect I'll thy assistant be. For this alliance may so happy prove to turn your household's rancor to pure love. Oh, let us hence. I stand on sudden haste, wisely and slow. They stumble that run fast.